Okay, welcome everybody. Shavua Tov. We're going to Bamidbar, the Ger and Sefer Bamidbar. Hope everybody's doing well. Rabbi Liebtag, it's all yours.
Okay, thank you so much. And today's class number 5 in our series. And if you didn't catch on, every week we're doing another book. And today's The Stranger in Sefer Bamidbar. And now the stranger should be no stranger to everyone in the class. We didn't finish Vayikra last week. We might have time to go back to it today, but we'll start with the Vayikra. We'll start with Bamidbar, and I'll just review the chart again, knowing how often the strangers mentioned Chumash. Remember 67 sometimes, and remember twice in Bereshit, 12 in Shmuel last week, 21 in Vayikra. That's why we didn't finish last week. 11 times in Bamidbar, we should be able to handle that today, and maybe catch up on Vayikra. Dvarim will take at least 2 classes, and then it'll take us to Hanukkah pretty much. Now, just a quick review, our primary distinction after all of our checking all the cases. Our conclusion so far was that Chazal's understanding were sometimes in Chumash, a ger is a ger tzedek, a convert, and sometimes he's a ger toshav, meaning not a convert, just a stranger. Even though it's not explicit in Chumash, I want to claim it's implicit. And our main distinction was whenever we find a case where there's an obligation of the ger, that would include an obligation to the ger, something the ger has to keep, that has to be a convert. We proved it from logic and from the psukim so far. And whenever there's our obligation to take care of a stranger, then it includes not only a stranger converted, but any stranger, as long as they're not detrimental to society, also, which is logical, based on the wording, and we'll bring some more examples. We'll do that much more detail when we get to Sefer Dvarim. That was our main distinction. And last week, we talked about Karet a little bit, that not only do we find the ger who is obligated to keep certain mitzvot, almost every time we find an obligation of the ger, we have, it's in the context of a prohibition whose punishment is Karet, being cut off. And we suggested was that Chumash might be doing this to include the ger because there's so much logic. In fact, the whole logic that the academic world claims bases themselves on, that there is no concept of conversion until Second Temple period, and the Bible doesn't even talk about conversion, is based on this idea that how could someone convert to Judaism because it's something genetic? Chumash, I think, is fighting that and saying, no, a ger can convert. And we saw that with Korban Pesach. That was the conversion process we saw. And that makes them the ger gar b'tochachem, which we'll see again today. And when we have an obligation of the ger, it's got to be a convert. And we're going out of our way to include the ger. And even though I could just say once, a ger is obligated in everything, and why mention it like 10 specific times? The specific times we do mention it is to make sure we include him, that the fact that he can be have a punishment of karet mi'amo, cut off from his people, that only proves that he's part of the people. Right, so I'm going to just share the source sheet one more time for those who want, and then we're going to take a look in Sefer Bamidbar. Let me stop the share real fast and go to the chat and put the source sheet again. Okay, and that should cover for most of you. Okay, so let's get to work and close our chat and we'll get to work. So the first time we find Ger in Sefer Bamidbar, actually it's almost a repeat what we had before. In chapter 9 in Sefer Bamidbar, we have what's called Pesach Sheni. That was our conclusion, okay. We have Pesach Sheni, and almost the same wording, V'chiyagurit chem Ger, should a stranger live among you who wants to convert and wants to do Pesach, okay? He has the same laws as Pesach, like everybody else. And it's the same law for the ger and the ezrach. Remember what we said, either whenever it says ger asher b'tochachem, that was the convert, that was the wording of a convert, or when ger and ezrach are together in a sentence, kager ke ezrach, we claimed ezrach is someone who's a member of the 12 tribes who has rights in Yovel to land, where ger is can never, even if he converts, can never become a member of a tribe, and therefore he can never have land rights that'll reset in Yovel. He has less financial security, but even though he doesn't own land and can't own land forever, he can buy land during those and rent it for up to 49 years until the Yovel. But despite that, he still has the same laws as an Ezrach, and that's going to come up a lot in today's show. So basically, Pesach Sheni is a different topic. It has to do because the first time they brought Pesach in the desert was in the first month in the second year. Some people were Tameh, and they complained. So we reviewed the laws of Pesach, and we simply reviewed that law that A ger can bring, a ger, if he converts, can bring Korban Pesach. And the same law applies. Why would I think otherwise? I might think that Pesach is only an obligation on someone whose ancestors left Egypt or redeemed from Egypt or rather the threat of Makat Bechorot, the plague of the firstborn. This comes to tell you that once you convert and you enter this covenant obligation to be a member of God's people, it's as though you left Egypt, and therefore you can bring Korban Pesach and your Chayv and Matzah, etc. Okay, now comes the big one, which I think is going to be an anchor to prove what we've been talking about. Remember, my claim was that Stam Ager is a non-convert, and Ager Asher B'toch Echem, which we always find when there's an obligation of the Ager, is a Ger who's converted. In Sefer Bamidbar, we're going to find a lot of Nesachim. I'll explain what Nesachim are. If you make a cookout nowadays, you're going to have meat. So if you're going to serve meat, it usually comes with bread and drinks. Okay? You need your Coke and you need your hamburger buns, etc., or hot dog buns. That's a normal thing. So the same thing, if you're going to have a bring meat to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Beit HaMikdash, you don't just bring an animal. Every time you bring an animal, you have to bring flour and you have to bring wine, which only makes sense, especially for sharing a meal with God. Now, in the desert, that was not possible. Why? Because we only have manna. So I can't bring flour and I can't bring wine because we can't grow it. You can't obligate something that's not possible. And therefore, even though when we leave Egypt, we have a lot of cattle and there are korbanot in the desert, and you can bring, tzon bakar, you can bring sheep and cattle as korbanot in the desert, and you can raise cattle in the desert, you can't have flour and wine. Therefore, God says in chapter 15 in Sefer Bamidbar, right after the story of the spies, God tells Moshe, "Daber b'nei Yisrael v'amarteh lehem, ki tova la'aretz," when you come to the land that you're going to be living in, which I'm giving you, "v'asitem ishel Hashem," should you bring an offering to God, be it an olah or a shlamim, olah or zabach, a korban that goes totally to God, or a shlamim, which is basically chapters 1 and 3 in Sefer Vayikra, okay, for any promise you made to bring to God, or when you bring it on your holidays, called Shamei Chagigah and Olat Riyah, which will make a Reach Nichoach Hashem. That's the buzz phrase in chapters 1 through 3 that the Korbanot make a fine smell to God. Whether you bring it from cattle or from sheep, Mipakar and so on. Basically, it's just relating back to Sefer Vayikra, the first three chapters. Anyone who brings the korban must bring together with the meat a flour offering, and he also has to bring a certain amount of wine, okay, for the olah or for the zabach, okay? And that's for a lamb. Now, this we sort of know by heart, but basically, in a nutshell, just summarize the details that are here. But everyone knows by heart, maybe don't realize what they're saying, is that the amount of flour and wine you bring is proportional to the size of the animal. So if you bring a lamb, which is the smallest size animal, you bring one isaron, which is the measure of flour, one isaron of flour, of solet, of fine flour, and one revit tahin, of wine. If you bring an ayo, which is a grown-up keves, a bit older, then you double that. You bring two esronim for the ayo, and shlishit tahin, a third of a hin, not double, but like 1.5 times of wine. And if you bring a par, if you bring a cow, that's much bigger. You bring three esronim, three measures of flour, and a chatzi ayin of wine. That's the amount. Now, how come everyone knows this by heart? If you remember, whenever we daven musaf on Rosh Chodesh, on all the holidays, we mentioned the fact that we wish we could have a Beit HaMikdash again, we could return, but in the meantime, we can't. So instead of bringing the korban, we say the korban. We quote from Parsha Pinchas, and the musaf offering is always a combination of an olah, a burnt offering, which includes seven klasim, one aisle, and either one, two, or many parim, depending on the day. But it's always cows. It's always parim, elim, and klasim. And after we mention the exact amounts for each holiday, what do we say next? Umintchato, v'niskem kumudubar, their flour offering and their wine libation, as it's written right here, shlosha esrim lapar, shnei esrim la'ayo, v'isron lekeves. Remember, we all know that by heart. That's within three for the cow, two esronim for the ayo, for the ram, and one isaron for the keves. And we don't even bother to do the details of the wine, viniskehem, and whatever nesach it is, assuming you know that, and the seref for chaper, and that's it. So what we talk about every time in davening, this is the source for all the amounts. Now, where is this located in Sefer Bamidbar? Right after the story of the spies. Now, this law clearly belongs in Sefer Vayikra. There's no doubt about it. The laws of Olam Zabach are in Vayikra. The laws of Mincha are in Vayikra. If this law, if this section was in Vayikra, no one would flinch an eye. Sefer Bamidbar, in theory, should not have laws. It's a story of how we leave Har Sinai and travel to the land of Israel. And it should have been the story of how we leave Har Sinai, get ready, and leave Mount Sinai and enter the land of Israel. Instead, it becomes a book how we leave Har Sinai and why we don't make it to Israel, and therefore focus on the sin of the spies and the sin of Korach, and basically the people who don't make it, ending with the, even with Baal Peor, etc. at the end. And then finally how the new generation, 40 years later, gets ready to go in. So that's the narrative of Sefer Bamidbar. But for some reason, we'll do a short explanation of it on the chart. For some reason, the ongoing narrative of Sefer Bamidbar is consistently interrupted with laws that belong in Vayikra. And this is one of them. We'll suggest a thematic reason for it, but we interrupt the ongoing narrative of Sefer Bamidbar. In fact, this is the last story of the first generation, because after the sin of the spies, there's the decree of 40 years in the desert. And as soon as we finish that punishment, that generation is not going to Israel, we insert a law which is thematically connected. We can either look at it in a positive way. Because even though you're not going, don't worry, one day you'll go there. Tell B'nai Israel, you will go to the land of Israel. And when you do, you'll bring these korbanot. That's if you're looking at the optimistic way. If you have the pessimistic approach, it's sort of saying, sort of in your face, look what happened. Had you not sinned with the sin of the spies, you could have gone to Israel. And now you can learn the law about it, but you can't keep it. But again, that's already parshanut, that's already commentary. But the main thing is we insert this law that belongs in Vayikra, and we have it here in Bamidbar. Now, why is the obligation when you come to the land of Israel? Because land of Israel, you can grow flour and wine. Therefore, when you come to the land of Israel and you make a korban, you have to bring flour with it. Now, so that was it. Then I skipped the psukim with all the details. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Kachi yaseh l'shor achar olay achar olaseh bakfasim, bakfasim, bakfasim obizim. That's what you do for every cow, every ram, every sheep or goats. The same ratios. You do for every animal. Each animal needs the right amount of flour. Now we summarize. Who's obligated to bring this sachim, to bring this flour offering and wine? Any citizen, why? Because an ezrach owns the land. You're about to conquer the land. Every ezrach will get a portion of the land, the nachalot, and by tribe. And therefore, of course, every ezrach now has the obligation. In the desert, they're not obligated. When they come to Israel, everyone owning land, every member of a tribe has this obligation. If he brings a korban, has to bring flour. I have a ger. Okay. The chiyagur itchem ger. O asher b'tochem l'dorotechem, vasar isher reach nechoch l'ashem, kasher tasu ken yasem. I might think a stranger who doesn't own land and doesn't have yovel rights and is not going to be part of the nachala, or someone like in the future is going to get land, is only going to buy land, but can't become a member of a tribe. Maybe because they don't own land and they're not part of the Yovel system and they're hence not in Israel, maybe they're not obligated and they have the din of Am Yisrael in the desert. This coming to tell you know that even though they don't own land, everyone is still obligated to bring the Sachim. Now, someone tell me what strange, first we have this question is going to be, is this a convert? Is this a Ger Tzedek or a Ger Toshav? Look at this pasuk and tell me what's strange about it, about the wording. Like if it were a Bible critic, you'd say someone messed up.
Yeah.
You know, in copying.
You have itchem and then betochachem. It's like which both? Why do you need the double? Or what's
the chiyagur itchem ger? Right. What's this o? O asher betochachem.
Oh, what's the o?
What's the o doing there? Just say chiyagur itchem ger. So the stranger be with you. This whole phrase is superfluous, isn't it? Why mention O Asher B'tochachem? Just say, should a stranger be with you, okay, and wants to bring a Reach Nichoach, he has the same obligation. why this wording, which is sort of superfluous, right? What's Asher B'tochachem? Now, think back for a minute, logically. Should a ger, let's say he's not a convert. Can a non-convert bring a korban, yes or no? Can a non-Jew bring a korban? Of course, a non-Jew can bring a korban. Ask Isaiah, we remember, Vavioti Mar Kodshi. Everyone can bring a korban. And of course, the question is, if they bring a korban, they can bring in a davar, they can bring a voluntary offering. Do they bring a sachim? So what's this telling you? Jew or non-Jew, right, has to bring a sachim. That's the rules of the temple. You bring an animal, it comes with flour. That's the rule. Now, it should apply whether you convert or not. Now, remember our definition that stam ger is a non-converted, as a ger toshav, and ger sher b'tochachem is a convert. Well, I think if that definition is correct, which we tried to define in Shmot and in our study of Shmot and Vayikra, then this pasuk is perfect. What's the first? V'chil gor itchem ger. That's a ger toshav. That's a non-convert. Any non-Jew, any stranger. Or convert or a stranger who converted. We're saying basically a stranger, whether he converted or didn't convert, right, is obligated to bring nesachim. And that would explain the O in between. Now, I didn't see anyone in the parshim say this. Almost no one talks about it. Those who do talk about it simply say that a ger living with you now or a ger in the future. They put the accent on the word the dorotechem. So they're saying they explain the reason for the double wording. Should there be a ger with you now or in the future? But that doesn't make any sense at all, in my opinion, because now no one's obligated. In the desert, there is no obligation. So everything is going to be for the future because it's only when you come to the land of Israel. So should there be a stranger with you now or in the future? But if the Dor Techem is going on both sentences, on both halves, should a stranger be with you, a ger toshav, or b'tochachem, which is a ger tzedek, in any time in the future, everyone has to bring flour like a regular citizen. And therefore, hakahal, the whole congregation, chukachat ye'eh lachem, lager hagar, any ger living with you, chukat olam dorotechem. And this is hager agar bihi, convert or not convert. Chachem kager, in this obligation, everyone's equal. So we find an obligation. Now, remember I said before the obligation should only be on the Ger Tzedek and not on the Ger Toshav? That's true. But these are rules of the temple, not rules. No one's obligated to bring a Korban. A non-Jew is never obligated to bring a Korban. So I can't obligate a non-Jew to bring a Korban. But if a non-Jew wants to bring a Korban, a voluntary Korban, he got to go by our rules. And when you bring a Korban, you bring flour, whether you're Jewish or not Jewish. Okay? So I think that's... I think this is a pretty strong proof. Now, and then Torah chat mishpat achad yalechem, lager hagar itchem. The same love between you and every ger. That's a phrase we've had many times, which is even though he's a ger, he has the same responsibilities. Okay. Now, the fact that he can bring a safim makes him, that's inclusive, and we want to make sure he feels part of the nation. Okay. That's the first one. Now, one of my first, in the first opening shir, I think I quoted the pasuk from Yom Kippur. Remember, "Benisvach lecha adav neisav legargar b'tocham" from Chol Nidre, which we all know by heart. And you ask anybody after reading that pasuk, who's it talking about? They have no idea. Am I correct on that? I think I used that in the beginning. Remember, "Benisvach lecha adav," and everyone knows the pasuk by heart because we say it in Chol Nidre. Who's it talking about? Maybe 1 in 100 people won't have any idea. Now, here's the case. What's the case? Right. And my point was, why does a ger need, if he's not part of Am Yisrael, why does he need slicha on Yom Kippur? Or why does he need slicha in general? Right? What's he need kapara for? Now, so the case is like this, also in chapter 15. V'chi tishgu, should people do something unintentionally wrong and go against one of the mitzvot of the Torah, something that Moshe told us and we make a mistake. Et kol asher yitziva Hashem alechem biyad Moshe, min hayom asher yitziva al havat. Any commandment that we receive from Moshe Rabbeinu, let's say Am Yisrael makes a mistake. And what's the first case? If the entire nation makes a mistake, right? The entire nation thought something was permitted and forbidden or vice versa, whatever it was. If the entire nation unintentionally made a mistake because they were misled by the Sanhedrin, then the entire nation has to bring what's called par. This is the par that the tzibur, the entire nation of Israel made a mistake. So they bring a par, right, for an olah reach tichoach, and a mincha with it, and a sechim, a mincha and a sechim with the par, and a series in the chatat. They bring a par and a chatat together. It's a special korban in a unique case. Now, b'chipena kohen al kol arat b'nei Yisrael v'nistach lehem. The entire nation of Israel needs atonement. Why? Kishkagahi. It was unintentional. And they brought their korban and for their sin in front of God for what they did wrong. And therefore, who will God forgive? V'nistach lecha da b'nei Yisrael v'lager gar b'tocham. Agar gar b'tocham, that's the convert. If he's not a convert, why would he need slicha? Why would he need forgiveness? He's not part of the nation. If he's not obligated, whatever they did wrong, he's not obligated in it. It's a shkagah for the nation. It's a laws for the Jewish people. And again, my point is, this is coming to include him as part member of the Jewish people. Now, in general, what type of shkagah do you bring a korban chatat for? If you know chapters 4 and 5 in Sefer, Sefer Vayikra, any transgression, if you did it b'mezid, if you did it intentionally, you'd be chayev karet. Remember? If you're chayev karet, if you do it intentionally, then you have to bring a chatat if you do it b'shkaga, if you do it unintentionally. So again, we find the ger mentioned in the context of karet. That was our topic last week. I want to bring another example. This is karet involved. And from here, I want to say again, we find hager gar b'tocham relating to a convert, a ger tzedek. Now, again, this law should have been in Vayikra. In fact, a very similar law is in Vayikra in chapter 5. Now, then we have a single person sins, okay, the coin does thing, and then we give our finale. Hezrach b'vnei Yisrael lager gar b'tocham, Torah achat yalachem, lo se bishkaga. Now, the chiyuv of korban chatat, if I'm not mistaken, is only on the Jewish people. If a non-Jew, there's no korban chatat for a non-Jew. This is a korban chatat, isn't it? This is chapter 4 and 5, which are directed to the Jewish people. So this is clearly talking about a chiyuv of a chatat, a obligatory korban. You can't give in a davaz a chatat, only if you sin unintentionally. You can't bring it on purpose, only if you unintentionally sin. And the law applies to Ezrach and the Ger. It has to be a convert, because if he's not a convert, he can never be chayv chatat. And therefore, again, we find Hager Agar B'tocham, referring to the same definition, like Agar B'tocham, I say it's the same as B'tochachem, that's someone who converted. And again, a law that belonged in Vayikra, again, we'll talk a minute why it's in Bamidbar. Now, in contrast, that's Shkaga. If someone does B'mezid, and then Hashir said, B'yad Ramah, Min Ezrach, Min Hager, Et Hashem Hu Mugadev, if they did the same thing, b'mezid, here's the source. When you chayv a korban shkaga, only if you do it b'shogeg. If you do b'mezid, you're chayv karet. So again, we find the mention of the ger in an obligation which relates to the chiyuv of karet, and it supports what we did last week. The chumash is consistent, and again, all these laws belong in Sefer Vayikra. Now, I'm going to take a quick break and try to explain to you why these laws are in Bamidbar and why they belong in Vayikra. I'm sure I did this here sometime or other in Torah in Motion, but again, this requires like a whole share, but I'm just going to give a quick summary of it. This is a little chart of Sefer Bamidbar, and my point I made before is that the left column is what should be in Sefer Bamidbar, the ongoing narrative. Sefer Bamidbar should be a narrative where Am Yisrael prepares to leave Har Sinai. That's up until chapter 10, till by Bin Sauron. Everything's ideal and getting ready to go. When we leave Har Sinai, we should go right to Israel, conquer the land. Instead, from chapters 11 to 25, it's who doesn't make it. The narrative talks about who doesn't make it and why they don't make it. First is the Mitavim, and then the Miriam, then the sin of the spies, and Kohath's rebellion, and Moses in Mivah, and the sin of Nachash Nechoshet, and the story of Benot Moab after the story of Bilam and Balak. Basically, what we find consistently from chapters 11 to 25 is Am Yisrael sinning and people dying and not making it to Israel. And whoever survived the last event was Bapur, it's going to make it to Israel in the 40th year. And therefore, from chapter 26, we begin with the census, who's going to inherit the land, and a set of laws about getting ready to inherit the land, including Arei Levim, Arei Miklat, the borders of Israel, the commandment to capture, basically all laws about Nachala, including the laws of the 2.5 tribes in every Arden, etc. That's where the book should be. And if the book was only these topics in the left column, we'd be fine. For some reason, again, that's a topic for Sefer Bamidbar. Sefer Bamidbar intentionally interrupts this beautiful ongoing narrative about 4 or 5 times with laws that clearly belong in Sefer Vayikra. Remember in Parshat Nosa, the laws of Asham and Sultan, Nazir and Birkat Kohanim, clearly all belong right in Vayikra. You could identify exactly where they belong. But for some reason, they're inserted here and they're not part of the narrative. Pesach Sheni is part of the narrative. We'll do that later. Chapter 15, which we just read, what do? We interrupt the narrative after the sin of the spies. We take a break. And again, we quote laws that belong in Bamidbar, the laws of the Korbanot of Nesachim, about taking challah, Shabbat and Tzitzit, we'll see. But again, a whole set of laws about the belong in Vayikra, that would easily belong in Vayikra. After Korach's rebellion, we have laws of compensation for Shevet Levi. And then laws of Paraduma, which we'll see very soon. But Tumat Met, clearly Tumat Met belongs in Tasriya Metzorah with all the other Tuman Tara laws. And then finally, the laws of Tamidim Mustafim that we read on Rosh Chodesh and all the holidays, and all those korbanot we're going to find in chapter 28, that clearly belongs in Parshat Emor together with the holidays. So again, why Chumash does this, that's a class in Sefer Bamidbar. All I wanted to point it out is that whenever we're going to find in Sefer Bamidbar a law about a ger that has to do with korbanot, it really belongs in Vayikra. That's all. So basically, that's why I said last week, what we do in Bamidbar really belongs in Vayikra, so we're still simply continuing Vayikra this week. But if you're not familiar with this year, maybe one day when we get the Sefer Bamidbar, we'll dedicate a year to it. And what's the reason for this? Why is Chumash, why is Sefer Bamidbar doing this? Why are we taking laws and inserting them? It's, Chumash wants us to Dorish. He wants us to ask him, what's the connection? Lamani Simacha? Why, Chumash is essentially juxtaposing laws with the story to look for connections between them. Okay. So that was just a quick side point about why these laws are in Sefer Bamidbar, even though they belong in Vayikra. So everything we're talking about pretty much will be from this right column, these interruption laws. Let's go back now to our topic. Let me just check the chat real fast. I'll stop the share for a minute and see if there's any questions. Oh, no questions. Either no one's listening or everything's clear. Alrighty. When it comes to korbanot, it's not so exciting. So what can you do? Okay, let's go back to our next topic. This topic, I remember when I saw this, I can't believe I didn't realize it before I started working on this. Paraduma includes the ger. Now, we all know, Rambam says it explicitly, and I think it's quite implicit from Chumash, that Tuma and Tara only relates to Am Yisrael. Only a Jew can become Tameh. And when you're Tameh, you can't come to the Mikdash. But all the laws of Tuma and Tara relate to Am Yisrael. They don't apply to non-Jews. Now, when we have the laws of Paraduma, what we're told, after they burn it and get all the ashes ready, one person gathers together all the ashes of the Parah that they just burned, and he's Tameh till the evening. And these ashes, the topic here, Vayta is referring to the ashes, are going to be for Bnei Israel and for the Ger Gar B'Tocham, Duchlechat Olam. If we follow our definition, which has been consistent, a Ger Gar B'Tocham has to be someone who's Jewish. Remember, that was a convert. It's an obligation of the Ger. And the Ger needs Tara from Tumat Mit. So but why mention him if he's like everyone else? Again, this is a law that relates to Karet. Why? First of all, someone might think, if it's true that only Jews can become Tabe and not non-Jews, I might think it's something genetic again and not something covenantal. So it could be, I need to tell you this, to tell you, even though he converted, he's like everybody else and he can become Tame. If you can become Tame, that's a Madrega. You follow? It's not becoming Tame is a Madrega, but the fact you can become Tame means you're on a higher level. So he's included, and we include the Ger by mentioning him here. Now, let's just see the case, and I want to show you how it relates to a Chiyuv Karet. Why? We'll just read the pasuk we read before. B'chibeso sefet defra parah, after we burn it, one person gathers together the ashes, and that person becomes Tame to the evening. And these ashes are for the children of Israel, or for the stranger in their midst, who converted, as we explained. What are they for? If you become tamei met, if you touch a dead body, okay, you're tamei for 7 days. And whoever became tamei needs these ashes with the water in them to be sprinkled upon him on day three and day seven. If he does this ritual purification on days three and day seven, he remains tamei. It's not he's tamei for at least 7 days, but to get rid of the tumah, he needs sprinkling on day three and seven. So what the Mainaf Kamina, what happens if you become tamei? So what? Now we have the consequence. Anyone who touched a dead body, hence is tamei, tumat met, and didn't do this ritual purification of the paraduma, of the mayas, of sprinkling the water, and he entered, assuming he entered the mikdash, basically it's like you had corona and you went to a bar mitzvah kind of idea. In other words, you came to shul, even though you were testing positive, even though you were tested positive and you were, contagious. Okay. So at Mishkan Hashem Timei, he defiled the temple. And what's his punishment? Again, karet v'nichvatam nefeshei mi'Yisrael. Why? Ki meidi dazorak alav. Therefore, the law per aduma is an obligation on the ger because, again, it relates to karet. And then we're consistent. And every time we have a law, an obligation of the ger tzedek, even though he's obligated in everything, whenever there's a law that relates to karet, we include the ger. And my point was not to be stringent on him, but to include him in our nation to scream out that even though he's not Jewish, he converted, and he's not a member of a tribe, he's like everybody else, the same obligations, and the same, he's our covenantal partner. Okay. And we discussed why we think a convert might not be Tara. Like, there might be a, what's the word? A race, not racial. It's not the word, not racial reason. What do you call when someone thinks he's better because he's a racist reason, I guess. Yeah, I guess racial reason for that. So I think this is going to go against it, that the idea that you converted, you're like everyone else, even though you're a convert. I think it's like really an important message to this day, and that's why I'm making such a big deal about it. Now, we're going to find one more time. Again, there's only 11 times in Sefer Bamidbar, but this is the last one.
There's no discrimination.
Explain? Go ahead.
There's no discrimination or prejudicial feeling.
Exactly. And we're going out of our way to say you're obligated, just like everyone else, to say you're like everybody else. We don't want to give him discounts on these things because then he'll feel like he's less important. Now, when it comes to cities of refuge, that's chapter 35. Remember, we're getting ready for the new generation to conquer the land, and we have the borders to the land, what we have to conquer. And we're going to give that to the different tribes. We're commanded, after we set aside the cities of the Levites, we have to set aside cities of refuge, called Arei Miklat. And we have to set aside, who are they for? They're for the people of Israel. Again, for the Ger, the Toshav, we'll see in a minute. Now, why are we mentioning the Ger with Arei Miklat? Let's take a look. At Shlosh Harim Titnu Be'ever Le'erdein, but Shlosh Harim Titnu Be'eretz Kanan, Arei Miklat Tiena. Three cities on each side of the Jordan. Now, who are the Arei Miklat for? Livnei Yisrael, v'lager v'latoshav v'tocham. Tiena sheish harim ba'ila, l'miklat, l'nu shema, kol makina v'shbishkaga. Now, who's this ger and toshav? Are they Jewish or non-Jewish? What makes more sense? It didn't say v'lager agar v'tocham, or ger v'tochachem. This is the ger and toshav v'tocham. Does it make sense? Is there any reason why I wouldn't allow let's say the ger didn't convert. No, is the Arei Miklat a special privilege for the Jewish people? Or is the Arei Miklat something universal that we don't want anyone who committed murder accidentally to be killed by the Goel Adam and he has a right to a fair trial? I think it makes sense that this is a ger, anyone in our midst, be Jewish or non-Jewish. Again, this is not the obligation of the ger. This is our obligation for the ger. I think just saying that this city applies for everybody, I think makes sense. So it's not the classic, it doesn't say Ezrach v'ger asher b'tochachem. It simply says a ger and a toshav in your midst. I think anyone living in our land, whether he's temporary or permanent, everyone has an Arei Miklat. Again, it doesn't make that big of a difference, but this last case, we're not talking about korbanot, we're not talking about obligations, we're talking about to make sure that murder doesn't happen in our land. And it makes sense that a a non-Jew has the right to an Ir Mikvah. Now, let's do a quick review. What did we say? Instead of Mabibar, we had a Ger Agar B'Tocham with the Korban Shkagah reading Tkaret, Paraduma reading Tkaret. We had in Yom Kippur, and then we just saw all these. It's about Gedev referring to Karet. And then we have, last week, Yom Kippur had Karet, Korban Shuvtei Chutz, Korban outside the Mishkan had Karet, eating blood had Karet, being Tamei Tenevela related to Karet, Ariot had Karet. Now there's two more, which we didn't see last week in Vayikra, in chapter 20, and then we'll see chapter 22 as well, which is not Karet, we'll see why. So I want to see now chapter 20 in Vayikra, which we didn't see last week. It's another mention of the Ger, his obligation, and a chiv of Karet. Let's see what it is. In chapter 20 in Vayikra, Badaber Hashem Asher Demor, Bel B'nei Yisrael Tomar, Ish Ish B'nei Yisrael Min HaGer HaGar B'Yisrael, Asher Yitein Mizero LaMolech Mot Yumat, Amar Tzikimu B'Aven. Why am I mentioning him here? Okay. So now it didn't say HaGer HaGar B'Tocham, but then say HaGer B'Sharecha. What makes sense? Is this someone who's Jewish or not Jewish? The wording HaGer B'Yisrael really happens. We'll see one more example of it coming up.
Jewish.
What? Now, what happened? It seems like he's Jewish. You know, if I'm a chayv karet, he's Jewish. I think a ger hagar b'Yisrael could be, you know, this phrase can relate to a convert as well. Now, it could be that because this prohibition is so bad and so, if molech is detrimental to our society, that it could be we want to get rid of, even if it's a non-Jew, it could be we want to, put it this way, even if he didn't convert, even if he's a ger toshav, he has minimum obligations of not serving idol worship. So I think it could apply to the strict law of punishing him might apply to a non-Jew as well. We're not saying you can't serve Avodah Zarah, but if you're in Avodah, in our land, you can't follow it. So it could be the wording here is different. It could be this applies to a non-Jew as well because of the severity of the law and its effect on other people. And again, if we allow a stranger, a ger toshav who didn't convert to be in our land, we have to expect that he doesn't become an idol worshiper, especially Molech, which was like a really bad custom that led to, you know, really bad culture back then. And therefore God says, if the people don't take care of them, I'm going to punish him because he gave his Zerah to Molech. He put his child to his offering to this right called Molech. And therefore he said, if the people don't take care, I'll take care of it, God says. Yeah, but the phrase Ager Gabisok, I think can go either way. And we'll see one more example of it in chapter 22.
Is that Ger under the obligation of Shiva B'nai Noach?
So every ger is under obligation of Shabbat Noach. The question is, I was making a big deal about Chiv Karet. So my point was, Vichratu to Mikir of Amo has to be someone Jewish. But it could be that because Molech is so bad and it's idol worship, so it might apply to a ger who didn't convert as well. And then I have to explain, what does it mean he's cut off from his people? Maybe any people he's a member of. But the main thing here is that we have to punish him. Like the thrust of these laws is we have to put the person to death. What Vayikra 20 is saying, in the land of Israel, we can't tolerate this type of behavior. We can't tolerate Molech, be the person Jewish or not Jewish. You know, bad, it's just simply a bad influence. And therefore, we don't have the classic Hager Gar B'Tochachem, which would be the convert. This is Hager Gar B'Yisrael, which I think includes a convert and even a non-convert. Now, I'll show you an example in chapter 22, which has a similar wording. What happens here? These are the two times we have Hager Gar B'Yisrael. See this phrase? It's unique to this section of Vayikra, here and here. In Bamidbar. We didn't have it in Vayikra. What's this case in chapter 22? Tell the people of Israel, okay? Ish ish mi beit Yisrael, umin hager bi Yisrael, right? A person from the house of Israel, or a stranger in Israel. If he brings a korban, now who can bring a korban? Anyone can bring a korban, right? Jew or non-Jew. What are we told here? If you want, it's a korban that you can bring it, but it can't have a mum. You can't have a blemish. Now that law, just like Nisachim applies to a Jew or non-Jew, this law also applies to a Jew or non-Jew. And therefore, both here in the law of Balmum, that you can't bring a korban with a mum, with a blemish, and that you can't do molech in the land, and we punish someone doing molech harshly, and we're obligated to punish that person. I think the wording Hager Gabri Yisrael is inclusive of the non-Jew as well, of the non-convert as well, but he's living among us in the land of Israel. So because he's living, even if he didn't convert, we can't tolerate molech, and if he wants to bring a korban, which he can bring a korban, it can't have a mum, and again, he has to bring a sachim. So I think if I look at this unique use of Hager Hagar B'Yisrael, I wouldn't put it this together with Hager Hagar B'Tocham. It's a separate category, which would include both a ger who converted and even a ger who didn't convert. Again, that takes us from this. I mean, these two cases are not by me, these two are in Vayikra, in the second half of Vayikra. Okay. And we explained the logic, why it's in sachim. Now, the last case we want to do today is what we didn't have time to do last week, the Makalel. Now, we'll read the story of the Makalel, and you tell me if this guy's a convert or not, okay? Let's read the story. Vayitzei ben ish Yisraeli, isha Yisraeli, the mother is Jewish, right? There's a son, there's someone born to a Jewish mother, v'hu ben ish Mitzri, but his father is Egyptian. So what's his halachic status? Is he Jew or non-Jew?
He's a Jew.
Jewish, but what doesn't he have? He doesn't have a shevet, does he?
It's in B'tochanei Yisrael, so I would think he's considered Jewish.
He has to be Jewish because his mother's Jewish. If we follow our tradition that the Judaism goes by the mother, remember the tribe goes by the father, but the Judaism goes by the mother. So then this person has to be somebody who's Jewish because his mother's Jewish, but his father is an Ish Mitzri. So his father wasn't Jewish. Whether he converted or not, we don't know. But his father wasn't Jewish. But he's in the midst of his own. This person is Jewish, but he's not a member of a tribe. Okay? And he got into a fight with what? Someone who's a member of a tribe, with an Ish Israeli. Okay? And what did this, we'll call it convert, or either he's a convert, his mother was, or his father converted, but he's someone who's not a member of a tribe, but he's Jewish. He cursed God, okay? And they brought him to Moshe, what do we do? Now, why does the question come up? Because is he Jewish or not? That's the question. And they put him in thing to find out what's going to be. Remember, one of the questions Moshe doesn't know. So what does God tell Moshe Rabbeinu? Now, what's the Hava mean? Maybe because he's not Jewish, if he curses God, it's not so bad. So what's God say? Take out the Makalel outside the camp, and everyone who heard him curse God, put their hands on him, and he has to be stoned. Okay. And tell Bnei Yisrael the following. Ish ish ki kalel hab nasachta. I want to read the logic of this. What I want to claim is, this is yet another case of someone who, even though he's a convert or even though he's not a member of a tribe, he has the same obligation when it comes to Makalel. And even though he's not a member of the 12 tribes, he has the same obligation when it comes to severe sin of Makalel, of cursing God publicly. And we have to punish him. Now, listen to this logic and tell me how you understand it. Well, Bnei Yisrael said that barely more. Ish ish ki kalel lohav v'nasacheto. What does Elohav here mean, Imshat?
Any God? His God? Not necessarily Yud-Kay.
So let's say someone believes he believes in Asherah or Baal. And he curses Baal. We put him to death?
No, because we have no jurisdiction over that.
That's right. What else might Elohim mean?
Oh, judges.
Judges.
Is that true? Wait, do we put him to death? Does it say we put him to death? What's the nasacheto mean?
He's guilty.
He carries his sin.
He's responsible for his behavior. I want to claim that Pasuk Tetvav is not a law, it's a principle. It's a principle that's going to explain the next law. In any society, if you curse your judge, it's called contempt of court, you take responsibility. In any society, if you curse someone who's in charge of you, someone of authority, if you curse that person, you have to take responsibility for your actions. You can't curse, you can't curse the judge in court. Or you can't curse the God in any religion. In other words, if you're living in a different religion, in a different country, if you curse your God of that country, you'll take the consequences. I don't think this is a law for the Jewish people. This is a principle of human behavior, of society. That what? In any society, anyone who curses anyone of authority has to pay the price, has to, carries a sin, has to pay for a sin. And therefore, v'nokev shem Hashem otuma. Therefore, in our society, if you curse our God, you're put to death. And the punishment is, what do you call it? Skila. Okay? And again, keger ke'ezrach v'nokev shem Hashem yuma. Be a stranger or a citizen, if he curses God, we put him to death. Now, it seems like there was a havamina. Now, based on our definition, keger ke'ezrach means, forever ger with ezrach usually means whether he owns land or doesn't own land, whether he's a ger, whether he's a regular Jew or a ger tzedek. I don't think we can put to death a non-Jew for being mekalab, but we can put to death a Jew. So I think this is setting a principle, because remember, this person was Jewish in our story. So I'm not sure what the laws for Bnei Noach are, because we really don't have we don't have any Masara of laws for Bnei Noach. I mean, the Rambam talks about them, but it's more theoretical. We're never in a position where we have a set of laws. What do we do with non-Jews living in our land about how we punish them, even though they're not Jewish? But I think this is talking about, if it's Kegir Kesarach, we go back to our first definition, it's talking about a Ger who converted can also be put to death, because that's the role of society. You're a member of our society, you pay the you take the responsibility. And therefore, if you're a member of our Kavanata community and you curse your God, you pay the price and we're put to death. Now, then we have a set of laws, not about, what do you call it, cursing God, but your actions with your fellow men. We go back to Parshat Mishpatim. V'ish ki akeh kol nefesh adam mot yumat. Correct? Okay. This is a short little summary of Parshat Mishpatim, isn't it? This is chapter 21 in Sefer Shmot. So makish v'meit mot yumat, and then makeh nefesh, if you kill a behemah, you have to pay for it. Okay? And if you hurt another person, there's everything here is man has to take responsibility for his actions, which is a summary. It's detailed in Parshat Mishpatim, but that's the basic principle, that you do something, you cause damage to somebody else, be it physical damage, be it financial damage, and no matter what you do, and you pay the price of what you did wrong. Okay. And what do you call it? If you kill an animal, you pay the price. If you kill a person, you're put to death. Okay. What do we say? Mishpat echad yadachem, kager kezrachiyya, ani Hashem lokechem. Now, why again we're making a big deal about the Ger Kezrach? Again, these laws are from Parshat Mishpatim. It's clear. And it goes back to this law, Shever Tachet Shever. I'm going to share with you something I heard a long time ago. I forgot where I heard it from and heard it from and what the source is. But I think it's awesome. About this idea of an eye for an eye. If you look at Hammurabi law, all the laws in Parshat Mishpatim echo the Hammurabi law code, and there's many articles on that. But the difference is not the cases. The cases are similar, but the Pesach is different. One of the key differences between Hammurabi law and Jewish law is that when you've done something, when Reuven hit Shimon, or when one person damages another person, it's not only a function of what damage was done, it's a function of the status of the person hitting the other person. So if a servant hits his master, we put him to death. If a master is a servant, we say no, pretty much. In other words, the punishment, be it compensation, be it death penalty, whatever it is, if a fourth class citizen scratches a first class citizen, we put him to death. If a first class citizen kills a fourth class citizen, we might say no, or pay some kind of damage. But there's no equality under law of the ger and the esrog. Now, the ger doesn't have the same rights as an esrog. So what's these laws telling you? That in Jewish law, we don't go by your status as a citizen. We go by what you, but the actions you've done to another human being.
So I think may I add the, one?
What? Go ahead, no. Debbie.
Yeah. The one that I've always been aghast about was that if a builder builds a house and the house and then the house collapses and the daughter dies, then the daughter of the builder is killed.
That's in Hammurabi law.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hammurabi. Yeah. And this is saying no, you get what you deserve and not what the you get the same thing and not the. But Chazal said the value. But it could be that this doesn't mean an eye for an eye, technically speaking, because there's no way you can do that. But rather, it means only an eye for an eye and not more than that. Only the value of an eye for an eye and not your life for an eye. And vice versa. So it's based on what you did and not on who you are. Because in Hammurabi, it's very much based on who you are, your social status. So it could be that's why that's finishing up this section over here. So that was the last case in now we cut up all the cases we did in Vayikra. So again, now where Vayikra and where this belongs, what's this doing in Vayikra? That's a great question because really belongs in Parsha Mishpatim. Rabbi Yovanu has an amazing share where he sees a chiastic structure that begins in Shmot and Har Sinai and ends in the end of Sefer Vayikra that puts all of Chumash together. He says like the end of Vayikra with Bahar B'chukotai goes back to Parsha Yitro. That's basically, the envelope bookends is Har Sinai. And then after Har Sinai, we have Parshat Mishpatim. And before Bahar Shabahar, we have Parshat Mishpatim at the end. And then we have the Mishkan and the Mishkan. And basically, he shows how beautifully everything sort of comes together with Yoshim Tu smack in the middle. So that could be one of the reasons for it. So when I'm looking, this might not be a law of Vayikra. This is really a law of Parshat Mishpatim. And it belongs in there. But if I want to summarize, I have to finish in a couple of minutes because I unfortunately have a funeral I have to go to. Maybe some people know him. Yosef Goldberg passed away. That's Alan Silverman from IO. He's been directing Moshe Avar for years. His father-in-law, Yosef Goldberg, was the director of IO of Moshe Avar back in the 50s and 60s before Alan. So a lot of people know the family, know him. So his funeral now is in a couple of minutes in Kfar Tzion. So I'm going to have to leave earlier for that today. Let me just check real quick if there's anything in the chat. Next week will be, today was more on the technical side. I took the cases in Bamidbar to support what we said last week, and they pretty much fit. And again, I think it's quite clear that Ol Asher B'tochachem, when we get to the Nesachim, I found several cases where there's an obligation of the stranger that's not including Karei, and maybe an obligation even of a stranger who's not Jewish, but it's only an obligation if he does something voluntary. If he wants to bring a korban, he's obligated to bring the sechim. If he wants to bring a korban, he's obligated not to bring a bamum. But he doesn't have to bring a korban, and therefore, remember my point was, I can't obligate a stranger to do something, or I can't have a prohibition if he didn't convert. On the other hand, I have cases of what clearly he's talking about a convert, becoming tamei, things like that, but where the punishment is karet, and those cases, I'm including karet, even though it applies to every, all the laws apply to a ger tzedek, to an anju, but I point them out to include him that he can be chayv karet, therefore he's part of our nation. I simply wanted to support that what we saw this week. Let me stop the share, check real fast the chat. Oh, he's been quiet on the chat today. Check that real fast. Okay, quiet chat. I'll just share the source sheet one last time for those who missed it. And, next week will be a lot more. Next week, we're going to talk about two interesting things. Next week's about Shabbos Goyis. As we've been saving the Ten Commandments. We could have done this in Shmot, but we have the Ten Commandments. We have the Ger who can't work on Shabbat. So is that Ger Jewish or non-Jewish? It's an amazing machloket. We'll see all the parshanim on it. And then there are very few, I think, pretty sure almost no examples where the Ger in Sefer Bamidbar is a convert, but we have to discuss what happens at Hakel. We'll need these two shirim on Devarim to cover all the cases. But Devarim has a lot of really interesting cases of the Ger, and we'll cover those. Okay, everyone have a good week, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you.
Chodesh Tov. Thank you.
Rabbi, I'm going to leave, but you can finish up the...
Happy occasions. Okay, yeah, I understand. Okay, very good. Okay, thank you. All right, next year, tomorrow night, of course, Mark Shapiro, continuing his series on Zachariah Frankel and Middle Ground, and that's always interesting. Regular shroom during the week. Parsha this week will be given by Wendy Amsalem. We'll be giving the Parsha Shir this Thursday night. I happen to have the pleasure of hearing her at Harvard Hillel last week. We both were there visiting on Shabbos, and she gave the talk between Mincha Maariv. But anyway, so she'll be speaking on Zoom. She's a Harvard graduate. Besides being a graduate of Yeshivat Maharat, she's a graduate from Harvard. So that's there was a reunion last week. We were visiting our son and whatever. So it's a small world. Rabbi Menachem, when were you last at? Oh, he left. Okay, very good. Okay, everybody, have a wonderful week. We hope to see you. And please, as always, invite a friend and have a wonderful week. And we hope to see you soon on for more learning. Thank you very much. Bye bye.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you.
Ciao, ciao.
Bye bye. By the way, Rabbi Jay, I listened for a very nice lecture from Mori, your brother.
Okay.
That was very interesting.
You mean when? Recently?
Yes. I think it was last week. Yes.
Okay. I have to ask him about it. I spoke to him Friday. He didn't say anything.
I was very happy to hear the family.
Okay.
Very good.
Yeah. Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you very much. Okay.